T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, hour two here on a Saturday as we hang out till 2:30 today. We're going to get to the Hawks in a little bit, some load management conversation. We got G-Day to get to, some college football talk. Just coming off of the first hour where we did a little bit with the Falcons in the draft. Now we quickly pivot to some baseball with the Braves and the Five Stripes because our next guest, well, he's well-versed in both. He's the great Joe Patrick, and he joins us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Joe, good to have you on again. How you doing, bud?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Nick. It's always good to be on your show.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Let's start with the Braves. Streaky, erratic, I think are two good adjectives to describe the way this season has started. Did you envision such a roller coaster through 14 games?
No, I didn't. I don't know if anybody did. It's a really interesting way that this season has started for the Braves because, yeah, to your point, it has been chaotic, especially when you look at right now what's going on with the injuries. You've got it seems like there are just tons of guys that are out, especially in that pitching staff. But I think in general, the biggest kind of shock to the system that this season has brought has been kind of the way that some of these games have unfolded, where it's been a lot of blown leads by the bullpen or even by the pitching staff, by just like not getting the quality of starts. But it's very much in stark contrast to the way that last season went, where it seemed like the Braves were constantly kind of fighting back from behind. But then once they had that lead, they very rarely let those leads slip away from their hands. And that's what just makes some of these losses so frustrating, especially when you look at some of those games that were happening earlier in the season, especially in that opening series against the Phillies. It's a bunch of one-run games that the Braves are just on the wrong end of. They were on the right end of all those games last year. So I think that that's one of the reasons why the start to this season has felt so kind of catastrophic for a lot of people.
Yeah, what is your concern right now with the rotation? Because we got Max Fried, obviously, on the 10-day IL. Soroka, obviously, not ready to start the season. And then, you had some ups and downs on the back end. Outside of Waskar Ynoa, it feels like everybody else has been inconsistent or injury-riddled. It's great that the bats have come to life. We're now fourth in the National League in runs scored. But what level of concern do you have at that top of the rotation right now?
Yeah, and again, I think that this goes back to a very stark contrast to what we saw last year, where last year you had all these issues with the starting rotation, but at least you had Max Fried, who was just that really rock-solid core ace for you that went out there and the Braves won, I think, all but one of the starts he made last year, which is pretty incredible. And this year it's been very much, it has not been the same looking Max Fried, just in terms of, his stuff that he had when he was out there, and then obviously him having this kind of freak injury by running the bases, that obviously puts some concern in your mind that now he's on the IL and hopefully he's able to come back. Maybe the optimistic look at it would be that he comes back, he has a bit of a break and comes back a little bit refreshed and kind of has some of those early starts out of his mind. But, it's tough. It already feels a little bit like last year where you're going through kind of a cycle of pitchers. We were seeing Kyle Wright pitch yesterday, who did okay. We'll see Bryce Wilson again on Sunday. So we're already starting to see kind of this carousel of guys coming through this starting rotation. Hopefully it doesn't get anything like last year where they were like trading for a guy and starting him on the same day or signing a free agent and doing something like that. But yeah, I think that the rotation really has to get settled right now. And right now they're just trying to kind of use this period of time to cling on and tread water until you get some of these guys back healthy and back in form again.
Joe Patrick joining us here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. One of the pleasant surprises has been Waskar Ynoa. A couple of starts, ERA at 0.75. He'll go against the Cubs later this afternoon. What have you seen from him in a limited sample size that has led to him having the success that he's had so far?
You know, Nick, I got to say that I've been really impressed and high on Waskar Ynoa since I saw him come into the team toward the end of last season. And he really stuck out because he's such a kind of a different profile of pitcher than what is on the Braves staff for the most part. I mean, he's a guy who can really, you know, pump high heat with, you know, in the upper 90s and has kind of that devastating fastball slider that with the hard break off the plate. And that's going to lead to a profile pitcher that racks up a lot of strikeouts. And so it's fun to kind of have that style of pitcher in the rotation. And I got to say, I'm just like very impressed with the consistency that he's shown, because I think that was always kind of the question mark with him was, would he be able to really convert himself into a solid starting pitcher that can be consistent, not just from start to start, but also throughout his start. It's something that plagued him in spring training. You know, Brian Snicker always says it's like he just has that one inning that kind of would get to him. And, you know, fortunately, he has not had that inning. And when we talk to Brian Snicker about him now, I mean, the Braves could not be higher on the potential of this kid. I mean, I think that it's a weird one because he's not a highly talked about prospect, especially in this realm of pitchers. And you've got the more talked about guys like Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson, but he is way younger than both of those guys, and he's already performing at a higher level than I think we've seen either of those guys perform at. So, you know, it's really, really exciting to see a player like him kind of emerge.
You know, you get to the outfield, and obviously we've got some injuries and we've got depth concerns in center field. You're going to have Guillermo Heredia in the eighth spot in center field today against the Cubs, not having any real expectations for him. I mean, he's been around long enough in Major League Baseball, but we're just not getting enough production, whether it's center field, whether it's Marcell Ozuna, just barely above 200. You know, short of the guy in right field who's on his way towards an MVP, we need some bats in the outfield to come to life, Joe.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. But I got to say that I'm really encouraged by the moves that the Braves made so early in the season to move Freddie Freeman up into that two hole. And I really think that that move alone is going to have some pretty significant impact on the rest of the lineup in a good way. I mean, I think that, you know, you have Ronald Acuna, obviously, who's hitting the cover off the ball right now. Freddie Freeman's also been hitting the ball very hard. He's just gotten a little bit unlucky this season so far. But when you have that 1-2 punch like that, I think that benefits a guy like Marcell Ozuna, who's hitting behind them a lot. He's going to have more opportunities with guys on base. He's probably going to see more pitches in the zone if there's guys on first base. So I think that can help those guys a lot. And then, you know, I also just think, you know, just generally down the batting order, you know, I expected more from Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies than what has been provided so far this season. And Austin Riley, you could definitely throw him in there as well. And I do think that those guys will get their bats going over the long term. So it's kind of the law of large numbers. And we know that those guys can hit. They just haven't done it yet. And we're still very early in the season. So I do think that I'm very high on this offense. I think that this offense, it will remain kind of one of the more potent offenses in the NL. And, you know, that could be one of the things that helps carry them while they are going through this stretch that we just talked about with the pitching staff.
One more on the lineup, and then we will get to some five stripes before we get out of here. You mentioned Austin Riley and Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies. Does it feel like that at this point right now, Austin Riley may be on the shortest leash as far as fan base right now, as far as the fans saying, hey, I can't take much more of this guy failing? Like, it feels like Austin Riley might be that guy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I've got a friend group that we're kind of always texting during games, and I would say the majority of those friends have a negative view of Austin Riley, but, you know, and I'm kind of the one who's in there defending him a bit, not because I'm defending, you know, obviously his stats, especially this season so far, but, you know, you just look at the profile of him. He showed he could hit when he first came up. Obviously, he was getting kind of a different repertoire of pitches at that point, and then guys got the book on him. But The guy is still yet to play a 162-game season, like not out of injury, just like, you know, he came up in 2019, didn't have a full season. Right. Last year was, you know, he played the full season last year, but it was only 60 games. So I still think that there's a lot of, like, you know, room for improvement for Austin Riley and a lot of potential there that's still untapped. And I think it's kind of a little bit foolish to think that it would, you know, to just like kind of like get rid of them. But I also understand the point where if you're competing for a championship, maybe it makes sense to parlay his value as, you know, this player with a lot of potential into somebody who can help you right now in this kind of World Series window. But I just generally think that he will round into form. I still think he's a good player, and I think that he can be a guy who helps this team that's on a championship team this year.
All right, let's get to the pitch. Five stripes against Orlando. It's coming up with pre-match coverage starting at 2:30. Jason Longshore, Mike Conti with the call, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I was just reading about kind of expectations for this year, and you know, I like the old gambling Vegas odds line perspective, and I see that we have just the ninth best odds to win the MLS Cup. So I take that and I say expectation should be probably the playoffs, but after that, I'm not sure. Is that a fair way to gauge where this team should be to start the year?
I mean, I think that ninth in the betting ranking is too low on this team right now. I know that they had a bad year and they have had to do some rebuilding on this roster, but I think that what they showed in this in the CONCACAF Champions League in these first two games before the Major League season started, I mean, they just beat a team twice who is, you know, one of if not the best team in Costa Rica. They haven't lost a game since like last November. And you're doing this all under a manager who's still trying to implement his style of play on this team. And so there's a ton of room for this team to grow still. They're not even close to their potential. And, you know, as the season goes on, I think this team is just going to get better for that reason. And also for the reason that you have a potential league MVP and golden boot type in Joseph Martinez, who's not quite 100% back from his offseason knee surgery for a torn ACL yet. But I think he will be there by the end of the season. I think it will just be a slow process. And I think that this team is probably not going to finish first in the East or second in the East, but I definitely think they'll be in the playoffs. And I think that this will be a team that once they get into the playoffs, nobody's going to want to play Atlanta United because they have the firepower to beat anybody on any given day. And so that's going to be something that scares everybody. And that's why I think that they should, you know, I would take those odds, honestly.
Okay. You mentioned Joseph, 82 goals in 93 career MLS games. You know, I feel like, and clearly he's a big star in Atlanta, but I think even the rational soccer fan will sit there and say, you know what, MLS, it's awesome. We love it, but it's not what it is over, you know, in, you know, EPL and some of the other great leagues in Europe. If the MLS was that equivalent, and they, if the MLS was clearly the best league of soccer on planet Earth, and we had the United, we have Joseph Martinez, would he be the hands down biggest star in the city of Atlanta? Like, could he truly eclipse Trey and Ronald and Julio and anybody else you want to throw into the conversation if MLS soccer was the be all end all?
I mean, if MLS was on par with those other sports, I think he absolutely would be. And I mean, I think that it's kind of amazing and impressive the fact that he is as well known in this city, despite the fact that Atlanta United, and not Atlanta United, because I think that honestly, the city has a ton of love for Atlanta United, especially compared to fan bases in other cities in MLS. But, you know, considering MLS's stature, it's impressive that Joseph Martinez is thought of up there. He's probably not as, you know, popular generally as a Julio Jones or Ronald Acuna or someone like that, but the fact that he's even in that conversation, I think, speaks volumes. And, you know, something that he said a couple of years ago, he signed a long-term extension here in Atlanta that I thought was so impressive was, you know, he's a guy who came from Europe. He used to play in Italy, in the top league there. And when he came back and signed this extension in Atlanta, you know, because a lot of people may have thought he was coming to Atlanta to try to get himself built back up again for a move across the pond. And he just said, you know what, like, I love this place. This is my Barcelona. This is my Real Madrid. And I think that that just speaks volumes to the attachment that the city has for him.
Joe Patrick, great stuff as always. Braves and United, thanks for popping on, buddy.
No problem, Nick. Thanks.
You got it. Joe Patrick joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. And look, you just take a look at the visual inside of Mercedes-Benz Stadium for a Five Stripes match. I mean, it speaks volumes about the love for soccer. It's growing. It's, you know, I don't know that it'll ever get to the point where it eclipses the NBA or Major League Baseball, certainly not football or the NFL. But it's building. I think we're going to get to a point another 3 to 5 years where I think almost, and not every, you know, not every franchise is going to have a rabid fan base. I mean, we don't even have that in the NFL. I mean, there's some NFL franchises that have basically no fan base. But it's going to get to the point where, you know, if these other sports don't keep evolving and growing their sport and game, MLS is going to sneak up on people. It won't eclipse the stuff overseas. I don't think it'll ever get to that point. But it's ascending. It's a slow, steady rise, especially with the younger millennials. All right, we will come back, continue on here. We got to get to the Hawks. And I'm going to throw out one question when we come back. We'd love to get some calls on that. And you're also going to hear some of Travis Schlenk with us on the morning show this past Tuesday. Stay there. Nick Cale Show. We hang out till 2:30. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Odyssey.com. Odyssey.com app. 1:22 here on a Saturday as we're with you for about another hour. We'll take you up until 2:30. Atlanta United pre-match coverage gets underway. Conti and our boy Jason with the call coming up as they take on Orlando, a team that last year made it to the Eastern Conference semifinals. Get to the Hawks here in just 1 second. Got the TVs on here in the home studio, ESPN. The Bama spring game is on. It's just so bizarre seeing Bill O'Brien on a college football sideline. Again, if you recall, Bill O'Brien got fired by the Texans, total mess with Deshaun Watson, GM, the whole operation just goes under. And what happens? Old Nick Saban scoops up Billy O and says, yeah, why don't you come to the Saban Coaching Rehabilitation Clinic? You can take over for Sark as my OC, rehab your image and your career, put up ridiculous numbers for 2 years, and you'll be a college coach or an NFL head coach again in probably 3 years. It's the way it works, right? You go to Tuscaloosa, you rehab yourself, Saban gets your stock back up, and boom, another payday. Speaking of a payday, I think it's time Nate McMillan gets one, right? What else does this guy have to do? He's had, no DeAndre Hunter, no Cam Reddish, Gallinari's out here and there. This guy's out for a stretch. And the Hawks just keep winning games. Now, I get it. You ran into Giannis and the Bucks. They're on a bit of a heater right now. Thursday didn't really pan out too well for the Hawks. It wasn't as bad as Chris Webber, who, oh, by the way, I don't know if you guys watched that game on the national telecast, but Chris Webber sounds so disinterested calling a basketball game during a pandemic. He sounds like he's broadcasting from a public library. Yeah, that was a nice little post move there by Capella. I got to tell you, Marv, he's had a pretty impressive year. It's like, bro, can you give me a little voice inflection? Can we get a little energy? Marv Albert's 78 and has more juice than you. Yes! All right, so Nate McMillan, 16-6 as your Hawks head coach, post Lloyd Pierce. And I'm looking at the losses. 5 of the 6 losses are against teams that are either playoff contenders or championship contenders. I don't know what else, and I get it. It's the middle of a season. A couple of more games left in the regular season. The NBA playoff play-in is, I believe, actually 1 month from tomorrow. Starts May 18th. It's ridiculous. They should never do it, but it is what it is. So I get it. You're coming down the stretch. You're not going to do a contract right now. But I'm thinking, what else does Nate McMillan have to do to get this job long-term? Of the 6 losses, now the Kings loss was a bad loss. And there's some, the way some of these games played out, blown lead against the Clippers, I get it. But we'll scratch off the Kings. That's a game you shouldn't lose. But it's the NBA. You lose the teams you shouldn't lose to. Clippers, Denver Nuggets, Phoenix Suns, Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know. Could we see all of them in the NBA Finals? The Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George, NBA Finals, possibility. The Phoenix Suns, possibility. The Denver Nuggets, they might have the league's MVP in Jokic, possibility. And Milwaukee, one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the East, possibility. Nate McMillan has come in with makeshift rotations and scattered random lineups and won 72% of his games. 16-6. He has defeated the teams he's supposed to defeat. He had one on the ropes, was an epic meltdown. They should have had the Clippers beat. They were dead, buried, and gone. Ty Lue emptied the bench, for God's sakes. And then it woke up Kawhi Leonard, and he went off. And you pretty much had Memphis dead to rights if you didn't allow Grayson Stinkin' Allen to act like he's back at Cameron Indoor. Nate McMillan's done a fantastic job. It's time for a contract extension, a long-term commitment. And I don't know that Nate is going to be the guy to take us to the promised land. You know, I think by and large, you look at his career, it is what it is. You know, he's a little above 500. He'll get you 48 wins in a normal year. He'll get you 50 wins in a normal year. Yeah, you know, they can win a playoff series, but my God, we would take that right now, hands down. We would scream and run for that. We would sign up today for the Hawks being a 50-win team for the short term and winning a first-round playoff series. We had Travis Schlenk, Hawks GM, on the morning show on Tuesday. It was myself in for John Fricke alongside Hugh Douglas. And right out of the gate, first question, I hit up Travis with what we're talking about. Take a listen. Travis, it's been a good run since taking over for Lloyd. Your squad has gone 15-5 under Nate McMillan. He's been fantastic, far more than I expected. I know the fans are starting to talk about it. It's become a talking point on all of our shows about the long-term future of Nate McMillan. Got to ask you, have you guys had any discussions about a commitment moving forward?
We have not. You know, I said when we made the change, you know, we were going to get to the end of the season and do an evaluation. But, you know, clearly at the time, you know, Nate would be kind of considered the leader in the clubhouse, right? He's working with us every single day. So he's got a foot up on the competition, and clearly he's done a great job. But, you know, we've not had any conversations, and he's, like I said, he's done a great job and put himself in a great position. But we'll have those conversations at the end of the season.
Travis Schlenk on with us on the morning show on Tuesday with John and Hugh. Now, here's the thing. Do I believe him? Yeah, I'll take him at his word that they have not had those conversations. But you don't think Travis might be chatting with other executives in the front office? Like, hey, we need to start figuring out what it's going to take and what, you know, what type of commitment we're going to go with, you know, what the financial aspect is, how many years are we going? And I got this reply on Twitter because we just posted the question at 929 The Game. And Jesse says, wait to see if they make the playoffs and how he does in the playoffs. Needs to win a first round or playoff minimum for an extension. Well, I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're the four seed right now. And I get it. It's jumbled 4-8, 4-9. Hawks are going to make the playoffs. Will they win a first round playoff series? That, I think, is the bigger sticking point as far as having a debate about can they actually pull it off? But I don't think that it should really factor in to Nate McMillan getting a contract long term. Like, I mean, obviously, if they win a first round playoff series, it's a lock. It's a formality. It's a certainty. Nate McMillan's your head coach probably for the next 2-3 years minimum. But if he just gets this team into the playoffs, I'm putting pen to paper right now if I'm running the Hawks and I'm sliding it across the table. And I'm saying, here's the offer, Nate. We're committing to you. You want in? I mean, think about where we were with Lloyd Pierce. 13-20. We weren't sniffing anything. We were sniffing the lottery. That's what we were sniffing. We went from 13-20 with Lloyd, which is a 39% win rate, to 16-6 with Nate, which is 73%. He almost doubled it. And he doesn't have guys to work with right now. That's the more amazing part. He's 16-6 without some of his best players. Then the question becomes, well, what can we do in the playoffs with a fully healthy team? Let's take a listen. Here's a little more Q&A with Travis Schlenk. And we talked about whether or not it is a now playoff series victory or bust. Take a listen.
You guys have made it pretty clear, I think, this year that, look, we're looking for progress. We want to get in the playoffs. We want to do some damage. You obviously made a coaching change. You weren't satisfied with where the team was. You know, in this industry, we're always projecting forward and we're having conversations of, well, if we get the Hornets in the first round, how do we feel? As opposed to getting Philadelphia, I know we're a long way away. I know there's a lot of variables in play. But what would not only a playoff appearance mean, but a first-round playoff series victory mean for you and your franchise moving forward and taking that next big step?
Well, listen, you know, our focus is just to get better right now. You know, we've put ourselves in a very good position to be able to make the playoffs. So right now, you know, we're just focused on getting in there. As you mentioned, you know, we're fortunate enough to be in a position where, you know, maybe having home court's a possibility in the first round, and mm-hmm. and that would be great. You know, once we get there, obviously, you know, we're going to do everything we can to win, regardless of who we're playing or where we're at or what our seeding is. But I think the big thing is just to, you know, have that experience for our young guys. Yeah, certainly, we do have some veterans on our team, and those veterans have been great for us, and their leadership and tutelage throughout the season, and obviously in the playoffs, is still going to be continue to be very important. But for our young core of guys, just having that experience of the difference between regular season basketball and postseason basketball, and what that intensity is, and how much more you have to be locked in, and how much greater your execution has to be. That's really going to pay benefits for us, you know, moving forward as our group continues to mature.
Travis Schlenkel on with the morning show. I was in for John Fricke on Tuesday with Hugh Douglas. I would say this from the playoff standpoint right now. Yeah, Hawks, Celtics 4 or 5 if the playoffs started today. I don't like our chances against the Celtics. Between Jaylen Brown and Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, and Marcus Smart, they've got some players, and they've got players with experience. The Heat, I feel a little bit better about, but that feels like more like a coin flip. I love our chances against New York or Charlotte. So I'm kind of split 50-50 on the four possible matchups. But boy, you stay in that 4-5 spot. That's where you need to be, because that way you avoid the Milwaukee Bucks. You avoid Brooklyn. You avoid Philly. I don't want anything to do with those first three teams. After that, we'll take our chances. 404-741-0929 if you want to jump in on the Nate McMillan contract conversation as well as the playoff conversation for our Hawks. 404-741-0929. We'll take your calls on the other side. And also, I'm going to lay into the NBA load management guy that thinks the league is a joke. And I'm going to call them out on their own BS. We'll do that next, Nick Kale Show. All right, great to have you guys in here on a Saturday as we hang out for about another 45 minutes. We'll take you up until 2:30 today. And this is a great day. As I mentioned to start the show, G-Day game, Five Stripes opener, Braves, Cubs, Hawks, Falcons NFL draft. I mean, this is just a great, great time of the year. Coming off of the Masters last week at Augusta. They are now at Hilton Head this weekend. I mean, if you can't find something in the world of sports that entertains you in the month of April, that's a you problem. That's the best way I can summarize it. We're going to get to some college football G-Day stuff to kick off the third hour of the show. Coming up in about 20 minutes. Not only is Georgia disrespected in the ESPN preseason top 10 FPI, Football Power Index, but they're being disrespected with their G-Day game today. Let me just mention that real quickly before I get to the NBA with load management. So the only spring game this weekend on TV, on ESPN, is the Alabama spring game right now, which is 10-0 White leading the Crimson midway through the second quarter, for those that actually care about the outcome. But the rest of these games, there's six other games today. I think there's like three next weekend, and I think there was a few last weekend. They're not even on ESPN2. They're not on the SEC Network. They're on SEC Network Plus. Now, I don't even know how you find that. I mean, I have SEC Network. I have the alternate network for the SEC. They're like stacked on top of each other, two channels apart. I'm assuming streaming, digital. But I thought like these spring games used to be, you know, in the SEC, in the heart of the South. And, you know, you factor in maybe an Ohio State game or a Penn State game. I get it. Spring ball is not for every college fan base. But in the South, you're telling me that they're not going to get ratings on TV from diehard college football guy living in Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida? Instead, I've got Italian soccer on ESPN2. I've got college softball on every other network. They're going to get better ratings than the college spring games in the SEC? I mean, if they are, and if there's a ratings track record that says yes, then I understand the decision. But, I mean, come on. The dog's getting no respect. What, do I got to stream it on my iPad today? I mean, I'll do it. I'll go Braves on the TV. I'll go Five Stripes on the other TV. And I'll stream the spring game. And I get it. It's a spring game. Relax, Nick. It's April 17th. It's not September 17th. I get that. But, geez, when did this happen? I thought the spring games used to get a ton of coverage. I mean, my God, ESPN's got 14 networks. You can only air so much soccer, for God's sakes. What are we doing here? All right. Speaking of what are we doing. What are we doing in the NBA with load management? So this past week, and we got our own issues with the Hawks, right? We got legit injuries. It's not like, I'm just going to take a day off to rest up. Like, we're dealing with legit injuries. But load management in the NBA is now at a point where people are basically having their heads explode. And I don't get it. So Sixers and Nets this past week, Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that, sparked a ton of outrage because, you know, you got Brooklyn and Philly and you've got probably five or six legit stars on the two teams combined and a bunch of guys sat out. Now, this whole load management thing in the NBA, this is, you know, something that started, it has to be at least 5 years, if not longer, maybe, you know, 10 years. And I feel like it started with Greg Popovich and the Spurs. And Popovich would give Tim Duncan nights off, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and then Kawhi Leonard on the third rendition of the Spurs, because they had like a 20-year run of dynasties. And then Kawhi Leonard really became like this load management night off guy. And I honestly don't mind it. And here's why. I strongly believe in work harder or work smarter, not harder. Like what? Why? So here's the thing. And most of the people that are annoyed with the load management in the NBA are the old school guy. Back in my day, Patrick Ewing would play all 82 games. He'd ice his knees. He'd limp out onto that court if he had to. Well, that's just stupid. And the best part of it is old school basketball guy, you know, who loved the NBA in the 80s and 90s, but hasn't really liked it in 10, 15, 20 years, is going to sit here and try to say, the NBA regular season, it's irrelevant. Well, if the regular season's irrelevant, old school basketball guy, then why are you so outraged over Joel Embiid taking a night off in mid-March? If the NBA regular season is inconsequential, as a lot of people try to say, which I think is somewhat ridiculous. I mean, look, do these guys take nights off even when they are playing? Yeah, look, three games in 4 days, road trip, back-to-back. It's a grind. It's a grind. I mean, I don't think it's as taxing as the NHL because there's more physicality. The NBA today is not nearly as physical and hardcore as it used to be because it's officiated differently. But, this whole thing of, like, we're just going to crush the NBA for taking... Well, if the NBA regular season is only about, the final 3 weeks, you start to play defense, you hit your stride, you're really in great shape, you're entering your peak, and you're getting hot at the right time for the playoffs, well, then why do you care if they take a night off in December or in February or on April the 13th? If the end result in the NBA is all that matters, and we know the NBA is about four or five teams, it's about two or three stars, and it's about dynasties and championships, well, then... Old school NBA, it's not as good as it used to be back in the day, guy. Why are you so outraged over the load management thing? You know, I would love to have a boss. Like, if I was doing daily radio again for this station or anybody else, I'd love for my program director to say, "Hey, Nick, you know what? Why don't you take Wednesday off, man? Why don't you rest those vocal cords? Give those pipes a day off. We're going to start doing radio load management." You think I'm objecting to that? "Oh, Nick, you're only doing 4 hours of radio a day. Suck it up." If I'm given the option to get a paid day off, I'm taking paid day off. You know, like we live in this society. "Oh, you got to be a man. You got to be tough." I'd rather be smart, healthy, and then win at the end when it matters. The NBA has always been a postseason sport. So I don't understand why this was such like a big breaking news story that like all the networks were talking about it. Then the morning after Sixers Nets, basically nobody plays in that game. Go back to the 70s. It's been about seven or eight teams for almost 50 years in this league. Four decades worth of basketball. It's been about the Celtics dynasty, the Lakers dynasty, the Bulls dynasty, a little bit of the Rockets, a little bit of the Spurs, and then Kobe again with Shaq and the Lakers, and then LeBron, and then the Warriors. And now back to LeBron. That's the NBA. If you just returned to Earth and you left this planet since 1972, I just filled you in on what you missed in the NBA for the last 45 years. The thing is about the NBA, it is a league that is set up for the stars to run the sport, and they dictate those things. So if you don't like it, don't consume the sport. I just love these guys that say they don't follow the sport. It's not as good as it used to be back in the day. But boy, the second you get a couple of guys with a night off, oh my God, they're so like, I think they're smart. Like if I'm in a position where I have a really big backyard and I'm not feeling well, if I can get somebody to cut my grass instead of doing it, I'm going to do it. If I have a house with a HOA, you know what? Yeah, I'm paying $150 a month. They cut my grass for me. Don't make me less than a man. I'm just at this point now with anti-NBA guy. Like, I want to jump through Twitter and just strangle that dude. If you don't like it, don't watch. That's the beauty of sports nowadays with all these networks. Like what I was just mentioning, there's so much sports on television that I can't get the G-Day game on regular cable. There's a ton of options. There's too many options. You don't like the NBA, don't watch. It's not what it used to be. I'll admit, I like a 93-92 basketball game. But at times, it is fun to watch a game that, you know, ends up 131-127. But the load management thing, well, we got to stop with this. It's a long season. And it's also this year a condensed NBA season of 72 games, and the season didn't start basically till Christmas. So you're going to have guys taking nights off. It's the same thing in baseball. Baseball is twice as long, but you know, you got to get some of these guys' days off. I would actually argue in the NBA, load management's more warranted than baseball. I mean, I get it. Baseball's a grind. Trust me. I'm not knocking baseball players. But, you know, if you're a position player, you take three or four hacks a day, you know, and you're playing right field, and you're standing out there chewing sunflower seeds, you know, drifting off into space at times. 404-741-0929 is the number. 404-741-0929. Garrett just put up the poll question on Twitter at 929 the game. I'm going to retweet that. You guys can vote on that. Do you think load management is overblown? It's a problem, not a big deal. What do you guys think? You can vote on that on Twitter as well. All right, so we got a lot coming up in the final 30 minutes of the show. We're going to get to some SEC spring games. Also, a couple of win totals in the NFL for the Falcons. Vegas putting out some numbers, which was pretty darn interesting. But we'll get to G-Day. We'll get to the Dogs when we kick off our number three in just about 8 minutes. I know Goforth and Chuckery and Randy McMichael were talking some college ball on Game Time today. Got me jonesing for some college football. I can't wait for that Georgia-Clemson game to arrive. But before we get there, we've got spring games. We've got magazines being published. We've got preseason, post-spring polls. And one from Cole Kubelik, I saw him tweet it out this past week, I thought was completely disrespectful to the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll explain why coming up next. Hour three of the Nick Kale Show. We're here till 2:30. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com, and the Odyssey.com app.